nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a heart.
Support for In the Garden comes from the Flower Farm, opening for the season on Sunday, 12 to 5, offering bedding plants, flowering pansies, trees, shrubs, and more. And arriving next week, hanging baskets in all colors. The Flower Farm open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing.
Money came by, and that's true love, homegrown tomatoes.
And welcome everyone to KFSK's In the Garden. I'm your host, Mindy Anderson. With us on the line today from Juneau, Master Gardener Extraordinaire, Ed Bajarski. Good afternoon, Ed.
Hi there, Mindy.
How are you doing today?
Well, good. I've been planting up a storm here, doing some revegetation work along shores of scenic Auk Lake, and quite nice, almost calm, beautiful reflection of several of the mountains here in the distance, with the snow line way up there, about 3,000 feet or so. Which is a fine place for it to be this time of year.
So, what type of plants are you planting out there, Ed?
This is native plant revegetation. So, I am planting spruces, alders, willows, red twig dogwoods, and some goat's beard along the shore of the lake. And by tomorrow, I'm probably going to be in the lake planting wetland plants that I'm transplanting from one edge. This is where some construction has happened. And this is wetlands mitigation, it's called. So that'll be good. And then on to the up around the parking lot, where it'll be more berries, including red currants, salmon berries, and thimble berries, and the native wild rose.
Okay, great. Great. That sounds like a lot of work, though. Do you have people helping you?
Nope, I'm it. Nope,
oh,
that
okay.
Keeps the paperwork down, and so I get all the money.
Okay.
That may sound a little cavalier, but it really is, not having employees does make life a lot simpler.
Sure.
As long as my body holds up, and these are all small plants.
Sure.
That's a good thing.
Okay, well today, of course, you know, we haven't had In the Garden for a couple of weeks now, but we're in full planting season. I was going to ask you before we start maybe talking about peas and beans and that sort of thing. What plants, is there anything that it's too late to plant right now? And anything that if we haven't started by seed, we can't plant at this point, or are we okay?
Well, if you would hope to plant leeks or celery, which are very slow, and onions, yeah, onions and leeks are definitely very slow to start from seed. Certainly could have been started back in February under light and such. It's hard to say whether you would get much, how big a bulb you would get, or how big of stalks you would get on leeks from them. And same thing with the celery, because they are so slow. So we could hope that you could buy some locally, but that one would be a challenge. Tomatoes, if you're planting starting early tomatoes, you might be able to get away with that. I'm getting ready to transplant mine up into a larger pot before it's still too cold. We had 32 degrees yesterday at home in Juneau.
Mm-hmm.
So my greenhouse is still too cold to put tomatoes, or I haven't started cucumbers yet even. So those tomatoes are going to wait until we get a little more consistent above 40-degree nighttime temperatures before I can put them out. So if you're just now starting them, certainly you're going to need a greenhouse. But other stuff, all sorts of things can be started from seed for transplanting, or a whole lot of things can be planted direct seeded now, which would include lettuce and Swiss chard, beets and carrots, all the greens, kale, mustard greens, and that sort of thing can certainly be direct seeded in the ground, assuming, of course, that you've been kind of warming the soil with clear plastic over it, or if you've got hoops holding up clear plastic, that would be very good also, and plants will like having warmer soil. So that really helps. But some of the cool things that don't really need it, Peas are a great one, and I mentioned to you earlier, beans, fava beans are another one that can be planted really early into cool soil, and they will germinate, where our standard green beans, wax beans, pole beans really have to wait until we get some warmer conditions. I have never started those indoors for transplanting, though I do occasionally see them for sale in the, you know, at the big box stores and some other places. So that's an option. Again, they need warm soil, they need warm air, the beans do, to have some success. The same thing with cucumbers and really zucchinis too.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right, well, that's good news. It sounds like we can plant just about everything still. And I know that I have seen leeks around town, and so I know you can get leeks and even some onion starts in some areas. And I believe the nurseries are getting lots of plants in right now. I want to remind folks that
this is great. Yeah, this is a great time. And again, that it's all about having good weather. I don't know if you've had frost. How cold your weather was yesterday? We were very clear, and it got there's just a hint of frost outside in a few places. So folks should still be careful about if they're doing transplanting from indoors to work at hardening their plants off. Again, if they're starting a Swiss chard, lettuce, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli starts, Brussels sprouts also. All of those need to be, before they're transplanted out into the ground, really do need to be hardened off. Gradually get them used to outdoor conditions using the lightweight agricultural fabric. Rimé is one brand name, but using that over the plants. Say if you're just putting them out onto your porch, onto your deck, on the ground somewhere. So put one or two layers of that over it. It helps insulate them from some of the cold. It also helps to buffer the wind and the bright sunshine, which can literally sunburn the plants, which we certainly don't want. So we want to get them used to this gradually, you know, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours a day over the course of a week, and then they should be used to outdoor conditions, and then get them into the ground. Give them a little bit of a very light dose of liquid fertilizer to water them in after you've mixed in some good stuff, compost and all that, into the soil.
Okay. Well, we have a couple of questions. We've got one on the phone, and then we have one here that was text to me, actually. If you'd like to make a phone call and ask Ed a question, 772-3808 is the number. Certainly, I can take your text, too. You can text me at 518-0571. So let's take the first caller here on line one. Welcome to In the Garden.
Hi. Hey, I have a question about if Ed knows anything about potworms. I got some in my compost last year and didn't realize. They ended up in a couple garden boxes, and they really didn't damage anything except the radishes.
I'm not hearing anything, Mindy. Are you?
Hello?
Okay, yeah, just a minute. Let me see if I push this button if it helps. Caller, could you ask that question one more time?
Okay. Hey, last year I got some potworms in my compost, and they ended up in a couple of my garden boxes. And they didn't really bother the carrots or the parsnips, but they really damaged the radishes. And so I started a new compost pile, and I've got some in there now, too. So I don't know whether to put something in the compost to kill them off or plant with them, or what do I do?
Now there's an interesting one. Cutworms are, they're a caterpillar of a moth, and I can't tell you what right offhand.
No, these are potworms.
Like.
P-O-T, potworms.
Potworms.
Potworms?
Yeah, have you had, they're little white guys with little white antennas. Crawling around.
It's not.
I am at a loss.
Okay.
I mean, not often happens, but it is. And how did you identify them? I mean, it isn't something I've even heard of, honestly.
Yeah. I went online, and I think that one last year, that one box, compost box, I had put some old dirt from pots, you know, flower pots in there, and I think that's how they got in there. So then I started a new one, and now, I mean, I have a million worms in there, but I also have all these pot worms.
Huh. Okay. I'm going to write that down and look it up, because I'm sorry, but I can give you no advice on that one.
Okay.
Other than, I suppose, use the compost in beds that aren't, well, if you had good luck with carrots and such and parsnips last year, that should be a safe bet. Boy, I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. And I, this is Karen Schrammick. So
I hate to recommend, you know, using any sort of pesticide in there. You know, sterilizing their compost, I suppose, but that's a fairly unpleasant process, you know, and an old stove outdoors that you never want to use again, or an old microwave outdoors that you won't use for anything else ever again, but, you know, trying to kill the worms, which unfortunately also kills some of the beneficial stuff.
Yeah. Could I use, like, a blowtorch on the dirt? If I pull out a lot of regular worms and then just use a blowtorch?
Again, with most compost, is highly organic, so you're going to get some, you may get some fairly, I would say probably will get some very unpleasant smells at the least of it.
Yeah.
I suppose the other suggestion would be just, if you can, take the stuff and dry it out, you know, spread it out in open pans.
Yeah, I tried that last year, and actually put it out on my deck.
See, on top of some black plastic.
Yeah, and the birds had a great time, but they still got into a couple of the boxes.
On a sunny day, that stuff will get pretty hot.
Yeah.
And so that might take care of that problem.
Okay.
You know, and you wouldn't want to put the compost out there probably no more than an inch or 2 inches deep so that the heat penetrates really well.
Right, right.
Okay,
well, thank you.
Karen, just a moment.
Okay.
Please
let me know, and I'm writing that one down to look up, because I'm not familiar with it.
Okay.
Well, I just so happen to have the computer right here next to me in this wonderful on-air studio,
mm-hmm.
and I did look up pot worms, and they really sound icky. So you can look them up, but I did see here the easiest way to reduce pot worm populations is with bread and milk. This is from allaboutworms.com.
Oh.
It says they will flock to a piece of soaked bread and can be lifted out and destroyed in large batches.
Okay.
Huh.
And that they do not damage living plants. So they live on bacteria and fungus. So
okay.
Might want to look them up.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So then I guess it may be some other pest that is damaging your radishes or whatever.
Yeah.
So
they were on them. I pulled up
the
radishes and they were all over the radishes.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I know it was.
Okay. Interesting.
I know they were to blame.
Allaboutworms.com is what I just found them on.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mindy.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay. Bye.
They actually sound really, really icky, and they multiply into the thousands, so that doesn't sound fun.
Okay. Okay. Huh. I'll be curious to see, get a picture to see what they look like and such. I don't know that I have them. I mean, my prime compost is pretty much straight horse manure, so it does get hot. Now, I don't know, again, if they are feeding on fungus and such. Once the stuff cools down, then I suppose however they spread, I suppose you could get an infestation that way. So sounds like an interesting new critter.
I have a text from somebody who says, can you ask about root maggots today? I have a horrible infestation in all my veggie boxes. They are tiny and white, and they started on my radishes last summer. You were going to talk about that.
One of our next topics to go along with the cabbage. They pretty much attack any cabbage family crop. Not much on kale. They don't seem to damage my kale much, but certainly they are in my neighborhood. And so if you plant those plants, including radishes, turnips, rutabagas, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbages, they are, and that includes Chinese cabbage, mustards also, they will very often attack. They are the larva damaging crypt part of them are the larva of a small fly. So when we plant, as soon as we plant, and that's the reason for doing crop rotation, don't plant cabbage family crops in the same plot, in the same box or bed that you had them in last year, because they overwinter in the soil. They pupate there. And then once we get a certain amount of heat, warmth in the soil and air temperature, they emerge and go flying. The adults go flying away to fly and find some new prey, another cabbage crop or radish. I know couple things. First, you immediately covering upon planting with the Rimae horticultural fabric so that we keep the little flies from getting to these plants that we want to eat eventually. Doing the crop rotation, like I mentioned, it's too late for this now, but if we can stir up the soil during midwinter, stir up the soil, and then when it gets thawed, and then hopefully it freezes hard again, and do that a couple times, that can help kill off the problem or reduce the problem. I'm not going to... The old diazinon, which I don't think is available anymore, was one of the pesticides registered for use on it that you'd literally sprinkle them around the plants, try to keep them away. So truly, sanitation is the best bet, and the barrier of the horticultural fabric to keep them away is the next thing to use. As much as I hate to say it, if you cannot grow cabbage family crops in your boxes, if they are in a whole bunch of these boxes, just don't grow them for a year so that at least the ones in your boxes pupate and leave. Then they're still very likely in the neighbor's cabbage family crops, but at least then you can hopefully start fresh next year. I guess that may be the best suggestion if it's pretty widespread all throughout the garden.
Okay, and then speaking of the horticultural fabric or the Rimae, now I've put that over the top of some greens that I've had coming up before, and then I've lifted up the fabric, and then, you know, some of these little flies come out. Is that because they were hatching in the soil? Or did they just get under there?
However, and I can't, you'd have to look it up online to get a picture of the correct fly.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of other different decomposing insects, larvae in the soil, and they are not all harmful. I mean, just like the potworms, many, many of these feed on organic matter or fungus or other things. So, yes, I do the same thing. You know, there's times when you can lift up the fabric and it looks like clouds of little flies come out of there. Those are not necessarily a harmful thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, there's the other concern. When you lift the fabric up, even just to check to see how the plants are doing, or you want to weed them or do something else for them, then are the little flies just waiting for you to open up the gate and let them in? You know, that sort of thing. So you want to be fairly quick about it, I guess, to do whatever maintenance, watering, weeding you have to do in those beds.
Okay. And when you are planting some of your cabbage and your cauliflower, what about, does it help when you put the black plastic down onto the soil and cut slits or X's in the plastic for them to come up through, and then you have the rest of the soil covered in a bed? How does that work, Ed?
Well, it does in a couple of ways, and you know, actually, you can actually use clear plastic too. And there's other colors of mulch fabric these days. You can get red stuff and white stuff and silver mulches, which they say use red for tomatoes, which I do use. I'm not sure if it works or not, but it does keep down the weeds. And there's also green one, which allows the infrared rays of the sun through the plastic and to warm the soil, but doesn't allow, that's what they claim, supposedly doesn't allow weeds to grow.
Uh-huh.
And that may well be the reason why you might be using black plastic or black fabric black fabric may be a little better in some ways because it'll breathe, right, where black plastic will not. I mean, although I suppose the soil breathes through the holes that the plants are growing through. The bad thing about having black plastic, well, almost any, but black plastic particularly or black fabric, is that the slugs hang out underneath it. I mean, they hide out underneath there, and then in the evening they come up and
munch
to on your cabbages or broccoli or whatever. So they're pretty well hidden, although you can also come along and lift that black plastic or fabric up and toss some slug bait underneath it. So that can help combat that problem, since slugs are, you know, our other problem after the root maggots.
Okay. Ed, could you speak just a couple minutes about getting back to the peas?
We got off, didn't we?
We did. We were going to talk about peas, and what do you do for your growing peas? What do you suggest they grow on? It doesn't really matter, does it, as long as they're moving upward, or what about
some
hanging
kind
down?
Of support, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're in a fishing town, so you've got gill net, you've got seine webbing. That works great.
Uh-huh.
You know, cut some alder sticks, leave some of the short branches on. You can drape the netting on over them. Or just, I mean, as I do, I used to do that, but I've gotten away from that, and just cut alder sticks and leave branches on them, just clip them off, and now would be a good time before the leaves get out too far. The nice thing is you just leave some branches on there, put a bunch of sticks in there with branches on, and you can kind of weave them together even. You can get as creative as you want with your trellising, but that's something that's very available. Everybody, I don't know about everybody, there's lots of alders around, and it's a renewable resource. So you poke them in the ground, and ideally you do that about the time or very shortly after you plant them, because once they're up 6 inches or so, then you start breaking plants off and all that sort of thing. I'm a chronic procrastinator, I'm the first to admit, and sometimes I wait, and other times I'll get sticks in right away on planting, and then they can grab a hold. And, of course, we can help them along, too, or even add some little sticks in between the big sticks to kind of help guide them up into the stuff that they're supposed to grab a hold of. Choose your peas, different kinds of peas, snow peas, snap peas, or even shelling peas if you like, say, canning and freezing peas. They're more work. I mean, I like eating peas right straight from the garden, and snap peas are great. Look at what the package says, and take that with a grain of salt. Many folks have grown sugar snap peas. Well, say they only grow 6 feet tall, which is ridiculous in Southeast Alaska, where they grow 10 to 12 feet or as tall as a trellis as you can make for them, pretty much. Some of the other ones they say don't need support. They only grow 2 feet tall. They support each other. Well, that's hogwash, too. And they need support, and they will usually grow 3 to 4 feet or more tall. The one thing nice about the peas, the packages, though, if they say 60 days on the package, we are probably going to have peas in 60 days because this is perfect conditions for growing them. And if you plant two crops, I've got some in the ground that were planted on leap day, and I'm going to plant some more here in the next week or so, and then there might even be a third crop planted, say the 1st of July or so, for a late crop. And, I mean, they grow. They really grow, and we can eat lots of them. They're tasty, fresh, and raw, and stir-fried, and whatever else you want to put them in.
So, for those of you who are a little bit scared about planting anything, chances are you can have good success at the peas.
Yes, absolutely. The main thing, well, certainly, I can imagine, I don't have a problem with them in my house, although there's deer tracks through my yard, and I saw two young bucks along the highway driving back and forth today already. But I imagine your deer population would probably like peas. Maybe you have more definite information on that one. So you're going to probably want to have to fence around things to protect them from the deer. Maybe your whole garden is fenced, which is probably a good idea anyway.
Okay. Well, thanks for the great information, and thanks for answering the questions about the root maggots, and let us know if you find anything more about those pot worms. Until then...
I'm looking forward to looking them up to see.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll be back within the garden next week, Ed, and we'll be looking forward to hearing your gardening tips next week.
Okay. Probably talk about planting potatoes. I know some folks already have some planted, and certainly I've got the first box planted and more to go in the ground. So potato planting and more.
All right. Thank you, Ed. Have a great week.
You're welcome, Mindy. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning,
that's In the Garden with Ed Byarski. We'll be back next week with more gardening talk and tips. Coming up next, we have music with Melena Marvin.
Every time I go out and pick me up homegrown tomatoes, what'll I be without home?
Support for In the Garden comes from the Flower Farm, opening for the season on Sunday, 12 to 5, offering bedding plants, flowering pansies, trees, shrubs, and more. And arriving next week, hanging baskets in all colors. The Flower Farm open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing.